Have you considered how your time spent on social media, in front of a screen, or texting your friends is affecting both your physical and spiritual well-being? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October is Redeeming Technology, A Christian Approach to Healthy Digital Habits. Learn more about Redeeming Technology at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 and ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Redeeming Technology.
As these progressive people and ideas take root with everything that is allowed to pass, we change ourselves as people, and we find it much more difficult to fight when the next battle comes.
If I profess with loudest voice and clearest exposition every portion of the truth of God, except that little point which the world and the devil are at that moment attacking, I am not confessing Christ.
There is no one who has exclusive domain on original sin. We are all born with sin, and it's not limited to any one race.
For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. Those two words, for us, embody our Lutheran understanding of the blessed exchange that Christ was born and died for us, taking our place.
Radio operators, commercial and amateur alike, just love Issues Etc.
It goes with us everywhere. I was trying to think the other day, is there any place I don't carry my phone? And the only place I could think of was into church on Sunday morning. I take it out of my pocket. I leave it in the pastor's office. It stays there for that 1 hour. Then it goes right back in my pocket for the rest of the week. The technology is with us everywhere we go. It is integrated seamlessly, or so it appears to be seamless, into our lives. It's almost invisible, like the air we breathe. But does it change us? And if so, how so? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about A Christian Approach to Healthy Digital Habits with Pastor Trevor Sutton, co-author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, Redeeming Technology. After that, Carol Tobias, president of National Right to Life, joins us to talk about the Biden administration's rewriting of a Title X rule allowing for taxpayer funding of abortion businesses and businesses that promote abortion. Rick Horton, St. Louis Cardinals play-by-play and color commentator, will join us after that to talk about the National League wildcard game. And then we'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson about John the Baptist pointing to Jesus in Matthew 3 and John 1 with Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel. Joining us to discuss Christian approach to healthy digital habits, Pastor Trevor Sutton. He's senior pastor at St. Luke Lutheran Church in Lansing, Michigan. He has a Master of Arts degree in digital rhetoric from Michigan State University, and he's co-author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, Redeeming Technology. Trevor, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Yesterday, Facebook and all of its related apps went down for several hours worldwide. It was really remarkable, actually, to watch. It was reported that just the cost of the global economy was about $161 million per hour that it was down. What did we learn from this incident about the place of technology in our lives?
I'm sure you've learned many things, things that we're still going to reflect on and consider from that. I certainly learned it was ironic that a book on technology was coming out the very next day as we had this very public technological malfunction. But I think really coming out of that, what we've learned is that we are thoroughly enmeshed in these things. The fact that we can quantify the impact of a system like that being down in millions of dollars per hour, that tells you that people's work, people's social life, people's amusement really depends on this. And so it really made us realize how deeply enmeshed we are in Facebook, other apps like that. And really, it's the times when the technology malfunctions, that's when we become aware of it. That's when we're kind of forced to reconcile with how much we use it, how much we depend on it, dare I say, how much we need it.
How do you respond to someone who says, since we created all these technologies, as their creators, we control them?
Yeah, when people talk about we created the technology, and so therefore we must control it. I just think of all the historical examples of things that have been created and then really got out of control. And there's plenty of examples. I mean, one that comes to mind, the Hindenburg disaster. That would be an example of a technological marvel and feat in its day, a thing that, you know, designers, engineers devoted great work and attention and effort to that, but it was fatally flawed. And then once they created it and then released it, it really proved to be powerful beyond their control in a really catastrophic way. But more than just history, you know, biblically, we have warnings that the things we create can control us. Psalm 115 is a really powerful example of this. It talks about idolatry. Their idols are silver and gold, the work of human hands. They have mouths, but do not speak, eyes, but do not see. And then it goes on, but then it gets to this. It says, those who make them become like them. So do all who trust in them. And this is a warning that idols, the things that people craft and create with their hands, they're dead and lifeless, but nevertheless, when we trust in them, when we cling to them, when we worship them, they exert a really fatal control over us.
One of the goals of all these technologies and their creators is that they be seamlessly integrated with one another, whether it be Apple or Facebook or any of the other platforms, but also that it be seamlessly integrated into our lives. Why is that seamless, invisible nature of our technology itself a danger?
In one sense, it's an advantage of technology that designers want to make these things to be background features of life, kind of neither seen nor heard. You know, so for example, you want your furnace to work silently. You don't even want to think about your furnace. And really the only times you ever do think about your furnace are when it's not working. An internet router is sort of the same thing. It's there in the background, but the only times you become aware of it is when that working is ruptured and it fails. And because that's the nature of technology, how it's designed, what it intends to do is to be invisible, seamless, easily integrated into your life, there's a very furtive nature to it. A way you can think of it is like a poisonous gas. You know, natural gas, you are aware that there's a natural gas leak because a smell has been added to it to warn you. And so you are not silently aware of it, but you can smell it and take appropriate action. But there's other carbon monoxide, radon. These things are especially dangerous because the presence of it is there, or it can be there, but you aren't aware of it until the serious effects occur. Almost, you might say, before it's, you know, it's too late at that point. And that's a way we can think about technology. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's kind of like a gas in that sense, but it's seamless. It's silently in the background. And I think both of those combined are what makes it particularly dangerous. One of my favorite quotes from Marshall McLuhan, he talks about how technology is put out before it's thought out. And what that is it's released into the world, and then we become aware of what it's doing to us. My co-author on this book is a physician, and he talked about, you know, the rigor that medication has to go through before it's released. But technology, it's a little different. It's put out, and then we start researching it sort of after it's out in the wild, and we research it in real time as it's having its effect on us.
Why should we audit our, just to get the rough numbers for ourselves on our technology use?
So auditing our technology use, it doesn't sound exciting or especially compelling, but I think it's vitally important in order for us to have any sort of informed action. And what I mean by informed action, auditing our technology, is simply quantify your technology use. And you can do this in any number of ways. It can really be specific to you as an individual or as a family, you know, however you want to do that. But just set a time that I'm going to check how many hours I spend on screens today, or how many internet connected devices do I have in my home? How many dollars are committed to this technological thing? Might be harder, but sort of what missed opportunities am I incurring because of this technology use? And whatever that is, counting that up for a period of time. And I think this is very powerful in then enabling you to make more critical decisions. There's a scholar of technology, a gentleman named Albert Borgman. He talks about pruning back the excesses of technology. And I think one of the first steps to pruning it back would simply be to ask, how much of my life is devoted to this? What time am I giving to it? How many of these things are in my home? Companies do audits all the time, financial audits. They do this to ask informed questions. Are we managing our resources well? Should we devote this much money to this thing? And I think in a similar way, technology audits let us or your family do that sort of thing. Looking at your time, your attention, your focus, and asking, is this being directed in the right places to the right things?
You spoke earlier about our inability to completely control the technology. Some would also argue that technology itself is neutral. How would you respond to that?
There's a wide array of scholarly perspectives on this question. It's one of the most fascinating questions in my mind. And certainly different scholars come at this in different ways. You can almost put them on a continuum. Some say it's very neutral. Some say technology entirely determines societies and people and so forth. And then people certainly fall anywhere in between those two polarities. But I think at minimum, the majority of technology scholars, and I would agree with this as well, is that technology at minimum inclines us or influences us to act and think in particular ways. So there's this inclination, this influence that it exerts. A very simple example of it would be scissors. Scissors are designed, they incline you to use it with your right hand. If you're left-handed like me, you're immediately aware of this inclination, this influence in the design the moment you pick it up. So are scissors entirely neutral? Well, not exactly. They're made to be used in a particular way. They incline you to cut paper with your right hand. They do that really well. But at the same time, I am able to exert some sort of human agency over them. I can use my left hand nevertheless, despite the design. I can muddle my way through it with the right hand. Any number of things. You can also use scissors for other things besides cutting paper. So at minimum, I do think it's a bit naive to say technology is totally neutral, but it's fruitful in my mind to look at the ways that it influences us to act in particular ways.
How does a Christian understanding of creation equip us to understand technology?
I think a Christian understanding of creation is vitally important and really a much needed aspect in the conversation that the world is having around technology. And what I mean by that is this: as Christians, we recognize God is creator, we are creatures. And that may not seem like a super profound insight, but really what that means then is we have limitations as creatures. We act in ways of creating. God has commissioned us to do that as creatures. So we do acts of creation. Tolkien called these, sub-creation. But the key is we are not the creator. And this gives a much needed humility when it comes to technology. We don't look for it to be salvific. It is not our salvation. It is not our Lord, because we already have salvation in the Lord. And all of this then is really, there's a hole in the conversation surrounding technology that society is having, because they don't have this language. They don't have this framework of understanding. Creator, creature, where is our hope and our salvation? Who is the Lord? And all of those things, I think, provide a vital frame for then approaching technology in more fruitful ways.
Pastor Trevor Sutton is our guest, author of The Issues Etc., a book of the month for October, Redeeming Technology. We're talking about a Christian approach to healthy digital habits. What have we learned about technology and mental health, both its harms and its benefits?
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Life Ministry is thousands of people sharing Christ's love and mercy and giving witness to our Lord's creation of life, His design for marriage and the family, and the God-given value of all human life from conception to natural death. Working with many partners, LCMS Life Ministries sponsors human care efforts that meet the needs of body and soul and provides resources and educational events for all ages. To learn more, email lifeministry@lcms.org and visit lcms.org/life.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR21. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Old theology, new technology. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Concordia University Chicago grounds students in objective truth, integrity, and excellence, and practices faithfulness to the confessional teachings of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. This is Dr. Eric Ankerberg, provost at CUC. Please consider joining our faculty community. We currently have openings for Dean of the College of Business and for Director of our new nursing program. And soon we will also begin a search for the new Dean of the College of Education. Learn more on the employment page at cuchicago.edu.
Have you ever been overwhelmed by everything that's in the Book of Concord, all the names and documents and the historical context? Well, in 2006, Concordia Publishing House, through the work of the Reverend Paul McCain, published the Reader's Edition of the Book of Concord, a fantastic guide for anyone interested in digging more into Lutheran theology. The Lutheran Witness for the October issue is all about helping you get into this resource. To pick up your copy, visit cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about a Christian approach to healthy digital habits with Pastor Trevor Sutton, senior pastor at St. Luke Lutheran Church in Lansing, Michigan. He has a Master's of Arts degree in digital rhetoric from Michigan State University, and he's co-author of the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for October, Redeeming Technology. Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas offers live online high school classes for students worldwide. Classes include math, science, history, logic, rhetoric, Greek, Latin, music theory, and much more. Classes are in real time via two-way video for teacher and student interaction. Find out more at flsplano.org. Faith Lutheran School, Plano, Texas, flsplano.org. Trevor, what have we learned about technology and mental health, its harms, and its benefits?
My co-author on this book, Dr. Smith, he's a medical doctor and a psychiatrist. And so he brought really wonderful insights to bear, especially on technology and how it relates to mental health. One thing that he brought that I found really fascinating is thinking about what he calls maladaptive coping mechanisms. What are hurtful, harmful, maybe we could say sinful things that we do to cope with stress, challenges, fears, things like that. And as I've worked with him on this book, it's become clear, you know, technology offers us just a labyrinth of maladaptive coping mechanisms, just a world of ways that we can inappropriately manage the challenges of life. And it's just teeming with opportunities to use technology in ways that are hurtful, harmful to our health, but also can be downright sinful. And then also as a pastor, what I've seen with technology and mental health, its harms and benefits, you know, I've interacted with many people who have, I would say, really languished as a result of technology, whether that's their relationship with their spouse or their children or their parents has struggled as a result of technology. And then certainly counseling many people from a mental health standpoint, that their perception of what their life ought to look like is dramatically warped because of what they see on social media.
How does our technology change us?
John Culkin, he was a colleague of Marshall McLuhan. He talked about how we shape our tools and then our tools shape us. And in this way, technology does in fact change us in a lot of ways. Dr. Smith was able to bring in the ways that technology maybe can change our brains, our dopamine expectations, things like that. My perspective, I bring in more historical and also kind of linguistic sides of this. And for example, language is a way that, technology has changed us. What I mean by that is a guy named Scott Fellman, he's a professor at Carnegie Mellon, back in the 1980s, he was writing on a message board and he said, you know, it's kind of hard to, tell when someone's joking on here or not. And so if we use these characters, we can create a smiley face and, that'll be a way to tell people we're, just joking. That technology, that message board and, using those characters in that way was obviously adopted and then it's been picked up in many other ways. Now you have emojis and emojis are, really just part of our daily discourse. We use them all the time in text messages, emails. In many ways, they're sort of supplanting words in the human language and, so forth. And so that would be an example right there of, technology changing us. Somebody proposing this thing and then it spreading and spreading and spreading in really unexpected ways so that suddenly our language now looks different.
You say that technology is designed for sin. What do you mean by that?
So in the book, we, talk about exactly that, how technology is designed for sin. That certainly is a provocative statement. And it's a bit more of a nuanced argument that we're making there. The point is this, there's a field in, technology studies, UX, user experience research. This is where people study users, how they use a website or a, social media platform or really anything that's a, technological device. They study that and then they, watch how the users interact with it and then they make design changes to maximize that user experience. So there's a big shift in watching human users as they use these things and then letting that inform the design process. Well, thinking about Christian anthropology, you know, if, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, then what that means is this UX research, watching human users, is going to be watching people who are fallen, broken, sinful people. And that means they're going to reinforce that sin and brokenness in the designs they make. And this isn't just an argument that we came up with. Similar, there's a, book called Evil by Design. And this is by a designer, not a theologian, but he talks in these same terms. He says, you know, if people are greedy, well, then we should consider designing to exploit greed. And so it's a fascinating thing that, if we are watching how people use things and trying to maximize their experience in, different iterations of technology, we probably shouldn't be all that surprised when, these technologies then magnify our sinful inclinations.
I remember that Google at its inception had the motto, I don't know if they've retained the motto or not, don't be evil. But of course it's become one of the ultimate ironies of Google's success is that it has in various ways, some of them corporate and some of them just the way that people use it, encouraged evil. What are your thoughts?
Exactly. And maybe you could say that was a naive ambition or maybe just downright propaganda. I don't know. But at, minimum, it would be this thing. And this goes back to some of your previous questions about these things growing out of our control. And so maybe a, positive construction on it, maybe at its inception, Google said, yeah, we are going to try to not, be evil. But we see how these things quickly come, grow out of our control and become bigger and more powerful and faster with less and less reflection. And so in that sense, there is a, I think you said there's an irony to that. And without a doubt, there's something ironic to that early motto they had.
How has our technology made us, as you say, oddly narcissistic?
It's odd in the sense that we live in a day and age that is, I would say, radically different than other times. Now, certainly Ecclesiastes tells us, you know, there's nothing new under the sun. But just the idea that each of us carries, if you have a, newer iPhone, you have three cameras, maybe four, on you at all times. That's a unique thing. And this idea that we have, we are just surrounded by cameras, cameras that we can then use to record ourselves, take our pictures, modify our pictures, and then with really great ease, post those things all around the world to then promote ourselves. And all of that just adds fuel to a sort of narcissism that we are the most important person in the room at all times. And the technology we carry with us in our pockets and in our bags, really everywhere we go, I think can very subtly, kind of that silent promotion of narcissism.
What are the dangers and the benefits of artificial intelligence? Much of what we interact with in our time on in front of our screens is, in fact, artificial intelligence.
Absolutely. You say artificial intelligence, and sometimes people, it conjures this idea of a robot or something that's maybe futuristic and not yet here. But really, many forms of artificial intelligence are we're interacting with them on a daily basis, like you were saying. Social media, using search engines, that is a form of artificial intelligence. If you use Alexa or Siri, any of those things, really mobile banking apps, it's really all around. And so there's absolutely benefits to artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence, depending on how you define it, I mean, really in some way, it's just offloading intelligent functions to a computer. And so there's something beneficial to a computer being able to see the number on a check that I'm depositing and do that rather seamlessly. That seems to be a benefit. Certainly there's other examples that people are able to cite of positive artificial intelligence. Search engines have been in many ways helpful. There's applications in medicine where artificial intelligence is very helpful. The dangers of it really has to do with the power of the thing with which we're working. And what I mean by that is you create this thing, you give it an incredible amount of power, you input certain parameters into it, and then in many ways kind of let it go. And the fact that it's artificial, it grows and works in many ways apart from human actors. And that's where a lot of the danger happens, is it almost becomes a black box, you might say, where we're not quite sure how the algorithm has come to be, because it's been artificially generated, but we know that there's a reason why the computer arrived at this point. That's a dangerous place to be, where at some point we are offloading human intelligence onto computers, not for small things like cashing checks, but for very big things. That's where there's a danger to it, where we almost cease to think as humans, and we let computers and other things think for us.
Pastor Trevor Sutton is co-author of The Issues Etc., a book of the month for October, Redeeming Technology. We're talking about a Christian approach to technology. We'll find out what he means by the blindness of the digital age next. Did the early church teach Scripture alone, or was this a new teaching by the Lutheran Reformers? Find out in Pastor Will Whedon's column in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Jake Domick recounts how he found the comfort of the Lutheran Confession during a military deployment to Afghanistan. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Do you know any military veterans in your church or community? Do you have a passion to support and reach them with the gospel of Jesus Christ? Then Operation Barnabas is for you. Called by Christ's love, Operation Barnabas engages, empowers, and equips LCMS faith communities to provide hope, healing, and support to military-connected persons living in their community. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces.
This is Pastor Clint Poppe, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Nebraska, proud supporter of Issues Etc. Each month we host the Nebraska Lutherans for Confessional Study, a serious study of Lutheran theology. We generally meet on the fourth Thursday of each month from 9:30 to 2:30, and both clergy and laity are invited. There is no charge to attend. For more information, please call the church office or visit our website, goodshepherdlincoln.org, and click on the green NLCS tab.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor. Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois. Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan. Grace Lutheran, McPherson, Kansas. Emmanuel Lutheran, Hamilton, Ohio. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Excelsior Springs, Missouri. Peace Lutheran, Filer, Idaho. Redford Lutheran, Redford, Michigan. St. John Lutheran, Schaumburg, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Unionville, Michigan. And Trinity Lutheran, Valonia, Indiana. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.
Confessional Lutherans are invited to rent a 4-bedroom, 3-bathroom Table Rock lakefront home in the Ozarks. Table Rock Lake is a premier lake in the heart of the Ozarks for boating, water sports, and fishing. This log cabin-style rental sleeps 12 and is 30 minutes from Branson and 20 minutes from Silver Dollar City. Learn more by calling Swanson Estates, 713-855-2681. Be sure to mention Issues Etc., 713-855-2681.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking about a Christian approach to healthy digital habits with Trevor Sutton. He's co-author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, Redeeming Technology. Trevor, you talk about blindness in a digital age. What are you discussing there?
So as I said earlier, I do think in many ways we live in an exceptional time. And what I mean by that, again, it's exceptional, maybe on a superficial level, but those things do matter. Part of the exceptionality of our time is the visual inundation that we have, that you are just bombarded with visual things. Certainly we've always been visual creatures, but the things that we were bombarded with were God's creation and human creatures and things like that, and not manipulated, artificially created technologies, designed things. And because of that, there's a philosopher named Joseph Pieper. He talked about this blindness that can come in the modern world. And basically, you become so overwhelmed by visual things in the digital age that you sort of stop seeing things. There's too much to look at, and then you ultimately end up not seeing much of anything. And so this blindness can really just come from overstimulation. If you go to a store that's selling a bunch of candles and there's so many different scents at play, you smell one and you almost have a hard time differentiating it from the other. And that's much of what it's like in the digital age, that we have so many screens, so many pixels. It's very easy for us to become deaf, visually deaf and visually blind to these things.
Does the same kind of numbness set in with regard to the content as well? That, and I'm thinking here in particular about the coarser platforms like Twitter is a pretty rough place. We become, even as Christians, desensitized to what is sometimes just bad behavior, rudeness, but in some cases, crudity and genuine animosity.
Absolutely. There's, I think in a sense, what you're describing, the numbness to it, the medium and the platform, the rules of the game in that place kind of dictate how we interact with one another, all of those things. I'm also very interested in the idea of the senses and how technology enables some of our senses to be in one place, but some of our other senses to be in another place. So people can hear my voice, but it's a disembodied voice. The sense of sight and touch and smell are kind of ripped away. And in the same way, when we interact in these digital mediums, you get part of a person, but not all of a person. And in that sense, it's much easier for someone to kind of keyboard punch you on Twitter, because it's just the sense of sight and you're reading the words and that sort of thing. But if you're in the room physically and you have this common sense of all your senses together, I think it's a lot harder to be that brazen with our interactions.
Let's talk memes. How are they more than just playful internet inventions?
So memes are one of these internet words that we all hear and know about. We see them almost all the, you know, every time that we interact with social media. A meme is, you know, just taking a picture, manipulate it in some way, and then somebody else either sharing that and it becomes readily shareable, or manipulating it in a small way, but kind of imitating the first thing they saw. And that word meme, you know, etymologically, the connection goes to mimesis, which is where we get imitation. And it's really fascinating to think about how imitation is a really powerful driver in how we interact with others and how we see the world around us. There's a literary theorist, his name was René Girard, and he talks about mimetic desire. And he talks about how we know what we want because we see other people wanting that same thing. So an object becomes desirable because it's desired by others. It's sort of like young kids at a playground. They all want the same thing. Why? Because everyone wants this thing. That's why I want it. And memes play on this in that I see you posting this. I see other people posting it. I desire to be like you and to be accepted like you. And so I'm going to imitate your way of acting. And so in a lot of regards, we can see these challenges that happen on social media. People may be familiar with the Tide Pod challenge. And it's just lunacy in a lot of ways, but it gains traction because of this mimesis, this imitation that I see my peers doing it. Well, maybe it's not that bad. Maybe there's something here that I should imitate too.
I'm intrigued by the desire to have this. Well, I think it's a twofold thing. It's not only a desire to participate, if only at the digital level, in some sort of movement, regardless of how trivial or idiotic, but I think it's also attended by that fear of missing out. What do you think?
Oh yeah, I mean, that's where, again, if I want this thing because you want it, you must know something I don't, and so that's why I don't want to miss out on what is perceived to be valuable by you. And what's fascinating is Girard kind of came up with this idea actually reading Shakespeare. And he realized, boy, Shakespeare, there's all these love triangles. And it seems like someone desires another person because that person is desired by another person. And I suppose the point then is this is not unique or new to digital media or Facebook, any of these things. There must be some aspect of sinful, fallen human nature that causes us to not look to God as the giver of good things, but to look to what you're looking at to say that's going to give me satisfaction or contentment. So it is fascinating that we see this ancient perennial thing manifesting itself in new ways through technology.
What are the blessings that God has given us through our new technologies?
One of my biggest challenges is I write on technology, teach on it, speak on it. I always feel like I'm a Luddite, and I'm just saying this stuff is all bad. You know, here's the problems, here's the flaws and the cracks in it. Certainly, that is not. My degree at Michigan State was in digital rhetoric, exploring the possibilities of emerging technologies. I think one of the things is I see more accelerator than I see brakes culturally and societally. And so if I am breaks, it's kind of a cup of cold water to kind of help us think more lucidly on it. But there absolutely are blessings that God has given through technologies. I should say this is not new technologies, but in many ways, the scriptures are a form of technology. That is media technology that God has used to proclaim his word to the world. You can look at manuscripts and codex and the printing process, that is absolutely technology. It's not new. But so in that sense, we can see how God powerfully takes the things of his creation and uses them for good, for salvation, for the proclamation of the gospel. And so in that sense, even new technologies are not beyond the power and work of God. So there are ample ways that these things can be used well, can be used to the glory of God. I think the challenge then is critically assessing these things, critically evaluating them, so that we use them in ways that are, in fact, blessings to the glory of God and not to our own glory or to our own satisfaction.
What does it mean to redeem our technology?
So the title of the book, Redeeming Technology, we sort of play with it in a few different ways. Obviously, that word redeem means to buy back or to gain back. But in the book, we also explore some kind of interesting nuances to that as far as redeeming technology, in the sense that God himself has used technology in a way to bring about redemption. The cross. It might sound strange, but the cross is a form of technology. That was a technology employed by the Roman Empire and other empires before them to execute people. And again, we hear that and we say that's not really technology, but in fact, there was a methodology, a technique to crucifixion. And we see God breaking into the broken technology of this world through the cross of Christ. And in that sense, redeeming, you could say, technology, but redeeming all of a fallen, broken world and bringing life in and through the gospel and the empty tomb of Jesus. And so when we talk about redeeming technology, we're talking about the ways that God is not afraid to use the stuff of creation to bring about redemption. And then flowing out of the good news of Jesus and the gospel, that new life we have in Christ, how do we then live as new creations in a way that interacts with technology as the redeemed ought, as new creatures and new creations should interact with the stuff of creation.
Pastor Trevor Sutton is senior pastor at St. Luke Lutheran Church in Lansing, Michigan. He has a Master of Arts degree in digital rhetoric from Michigan State University, and he's co-author of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for October, Redeeming Technology. You can purchase Redeeming Technology at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Ask for The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for October, Redeeming Technology, 1-800-325-3040. Trevor, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Carol Tobias, president of National Right to Life, will be alongside after the break. We'll talk about the Biden administration's rewriting of a Title X rule allowing for tax funding of abortion businesses. Have you considered how your time spent on social media, in front of a screen, or texting your friends is affecting both your physical and spiritual well-being? The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for October is Redeeming Technology, A Christian Approach to Healthy Digital Habits. Learn more about Redeeming Technology at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 and ask for The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month, Redeeming Technology.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we continue trekking through St. Mark with Elijah, the boy with the unclean spirit, who's the greatest, not following us, and teaching on divorce. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or on your favorite podcast provider.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Not everyone is comfortable with new technology. Dial A Podcast gives all generations of your congregation an easy way to hear your sermons or even devotionals and Bible studies. Once you've completed a simple one-time setup, we take care of the rest. All your congregants have to do is dial the number from any phone to listen to your latest podcast, all at no additional cost to them. Dial A Podcast. Extend the reach of your sermons. Get started at dialapodcast.com now.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. LutherAcademy.com and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.